alley, rising slowly alongside the sniper. Raising a fist, he pointed directions, and the others split into teams to converge on the sniper from different directions. A Kalashnikov constantly chattered at the trees, the noise guiding the companions to the location of the hidden gunner. Minutes later, they found him. The blue shirt was sitting on a hunter's box, just a few planks nailed to branches, giving him a stable platform to hide in as he waited for prey to come into view. The upper branches of the tree shook as spent brass arched from the hot breech of his blaster. Soft curses sounded, and the shooting stopped. Creeping closer, Ryan saw the SEC man rummaging frantically in a duffel bag. Then he pulled another law into view with a satisfied cry.
Don't!
Ryan stood, working the bolt on the Steyr. The weapon was already loaded, but the noise would drive home the point that he was armed. The SEC man registered shock, then rage, and dropped the law, going for his long blaster. Without a qualm, Ryan fired, hitting the man in the chest, the 7.62mm round slamming him backward into the tree trunk. Then JB added the fury of his Uzi, and the corpse tumbled from the trees to land on a rock with a sickening crunch. Rivulets of blood began dripping onto the ground from his hidden face.
Doc, Dean, sweep the area for any more.
Ryan approached the corpse. There was a map sticking out of his back pocket. But before he could reach the document, the bushes parted, and two more blue shirts walked out, firing their Kalashnikovs. Diving for cover, Ryan shot the closer man in the belly with his Steyr. The other blue fired his long blaster, but then a knife sprouted from his throat. Gagging on his own blood, the SEC man fell to his knees, still triggering the AK-47, shooting in every direction. Then Christy stepped from behind a tree and fired her hand blaster into his face, finishing the job.
Perimeter sweep, 20 yards.
Ryan rose from the ground. Christy, Doc, and Dean moved into the forest as JB climbed up the crude ladder. On the platform, he stayed crouched, studying the forest around them. When satisfied, he whistled an all-clear signal and climbed back down with the duffel bag and the dead man's AK-47. Ryan got the map as the armorer checked the contents of the duffel.
Dark night. He had two more laws and an implode grenade that could have reduced the Hummer to a soup can.
If he got close enough.
Ryan looked over the plastic paper. It was the same as the other, just a map of Tennessee, nothing more. A long whistle came from the forest, and Ryan answered with two short ones. The rest of the companions stepped into sight from several locations, Christy holstering her revolver.
Nobody that we can find. You find anything useful?
Nothing so far.
Ryan turned the map over. Nothing was circled or highlighted as with the last one they had found, but there was a notation scrawled at the bottom with indelible ink. Ryan looked twice at the map to make sure he was reading it correctly.
There's a name on this. Might mean shit, but here it is.
Who?
Checkpoints along Timber Ridge Road. Password is El Moro. Main gate entry password. Jamevu.
What did you say?
Doc dropped the Lama from limp fingers. The man looked as if he had just been hit with a club.
Silas.
Ryan showed him the map.
Silas Jamevu.
Without speaking, Doc retrieved the weapon, his mind lost in dark thoughts. Stuffing ammo clips from the corpse into his pockets, Dean frowned.
I thought he died in that Mattrance jump.
We hoped he died. Guess not.
Crap. We can't go anywhere near a redoubt. Silas knows the access codes and could have SEC men waiting for us.
JB grunted, slinging the duffel bag over his shoulder.
So what we do?
We find his base and kill the son of a bitch permanently this time. Come on, we still have to fix that tire and get across the bridge. Once on the other side, we'll hide the wag and proceed on foot.
Standing alone on the top floor of the observation tower at Casanovaville, a SEC man squinted at the cloudy sky and smiled. Almost lunchtime. Although the sun was blocked by heavy clouds, he could still see that it was just reaching dead overhead. Noon. Soon a servant would bring him a basket of food. The sentry only hoped it wasn't rat again. They had been eating rat for the past month, and he was getting sick of the same thing every freaking day. Sure, it was better than nothing, but what good was being a SEC man if you ate like a civilian? With a sigh, he rested the heavy barrel of his muzzle-loading long blaster on a shoulder. Spare pieces of flint were tucked into loops on his belt, and his shirt pocket was neatly lined with paper cartridges for charging his weapon. It was a bloody clever invention of the Baron's. Instead of counting as you poured black powder into your weapon, he had made these little paper tubes from library books. A person bit off the top and poured out the black powder inside. It was exactly enough for a full charge, always the same. At the bottom was the mini-ball, and you used a Nimrod to stuff the paper that the cartridge was made out of down the barrel to hold the load in place. Powder, shot, and wadding all in one. The SecMen could fire 10 times faster than before, making their crew of 100 shoot like 1,000. One of the servants had dared to suggest it was a pre-dark idea from something called the Civil War, and the liar had been beaten to death right in the market square. Nobody insulted the Baron and lived. Except his mudhead of a son, that was. Lightning flashed overhead, and the sentry felt a warm breeze blow over the tower. In October? Suddenly, there was a loud peal of thunder, and bright light flooded the ville. Glancing upward, he was stunned to see the sky become an impossibly clear blue color. He had never seen anything like it before. Then his eyes began to sting, and the world went totally black. Blinking to clear his vision, the sentry realized in horror that he was blind. He began to itch all over, as if a million insects were eating his skin. Dropping his long blaster, the SecMen dashed for the stairs, going for help, and went straight off the edge of the roof. He screamed all the way down to the cobblestone streets, and abruptly stopped as he hit. Nobody noticed. Cooked birds were also plummeting from the sky, the leaves falling from the wilting trees. Tendrils of smoke rose from the thatched roofs of huts. People screamed, clawing at their faces. Horses bolted in panic. Blasters exploded, removing hands and entire arms. The fuel dump fireballed, and the artesian well began to boil. Becoming hotter by the second, the thick walls of the castle started to turn reddish, then orange, and the melting stones began to sag toward the ground in thick, glowing streams. Support timbers snapped, windows shattered, and the shrieking of people trapped in the dungeon rose to anguished howls. Minutes later, silence ruled what remained of Casanova. Not a wall stood intact, not a creature moved, not a sound could be heard, except for a low bubbling from the white-hot lava pool in the middle of the flaky black soil. Then a low rumble of thunder sounded as lightning flashed, and the clear sky darkened again to form a solid dome of stormy clouds over the precise circle of destruction. The sounds of metal on metal and metal on stone filled the hollow expanse of the quarry. A wide road spiraled down the sides of the great pit all the way to the cutting floor, where the slaves trimmed the massive stone blocks into smooth rectangles. A sentry post was placed at the bottom of the ramp, with another at the distant top. At the bottom of the quarry was a runoff pool to catch the rain and divert it from the workers. An electric sump pump sucked out the muddy water, a feeder pipe rising along the quarry wall and disappearing over the top. The feeder pipe was festooned with concertina wire to discourage climbing. Near the pool was a set of stocks where an unconscious slave still stood, flies covering the bloody shreds of his back. On the cutting floor, an APC backed near a stone block, and the driver got out. Carefully, he inspected the block for cracks, then measured it with a yardstick, and finally used a plumb line to make sure it was squared off neat.
"This'll do. Hitch the bitch, boys!"
A team of slaves moved forward and began to attach long lengths of steel chains from the APC to the block so it could be dragged off to join the hundreds of others that were part of the wall ringing the complex.
"Where are we at?"
The overseer was smoking a cigarette and offering the pack. The slaves looked on with greed, but said nothing, and continued to work.
"Thanks."
The driver took one and lit it with a stick match.
"Just started the second course. Another month, it'll be 10 feet high."
"Shoot. What a sight. Ain't no mutie gonna get over that."
"Hell, boy, we couldn't smash through it now, even with one of the rocket tube things."
"Ain't it the truth, brother?"
When the slaves were done, the overseer checked the links around the block, while the driver checked the tow bar on the APC, then climbed inside. The slaves stood nearby,
savoring the moment of not doing anything.
All set here. Roll away.
Back in a few.
The driver waved an arm through the top hatch and drove off slowly, the mammoth stone dragging behind, sounding like a baby earthquake.